Hi, my name's Nicole and I'm a fake fan.
Hi, Nicole.
Hi, my name is Calvin and I am a fake fan.
Hi, Calvin.
Hello. My name is Tristan and I'm a fake fan.
Hi, Tristan. Why do you sound like inebriated?
My new bit's just going to be I'm going to do a different voice every time.
I thought you were going for the Italian voice.
Why would you assume that?
Today, we watched Sleeping Beauty from the year 1959 from good old Walt Disney Studios.
Warner Brothers is from Warner Brothers.
From Walt Disney Animation Studios.
Productions.
Productions Company.
Incorporated.
This is LLC.
Yeah, this is a fun movie. I guess we'll just start by going around seeing who's the fake fan today. Nicole, are you a fake fan of Sleeping Beauty?
Yes, I am a fake fan. Sleeping Beauty is like my movie today, so.
Wow. I am a fake fan of Sleeping Beauty as well. I have not seen it. Actually, I guess I don't think I've seen it. Maybe I have.
Yeah, it's like one of those movies where I feel like it was on when I was little, but didn't pay attention because I was little.
But I will say, Nicole, I feel like you're more of a fake fan because you talk about it a little bit.
It's my favorite. It's my favorite Disney princess. Besides maybe Merida, but.
Tristan, are you a fake fan?
No. Yeah, I'm a fake fan. I'm just fucking with you guys.
Wow, that's so like harmful in this environment.
Yes, I'm a fake fan. I think I mentioned last week about how I haven't seen a lot of the Disney classics, and I feel like maybe I've seen them at some point. And I have like some memories of them. Like I haven't seen Little Mermaid, but I remember like the whole kiss the girl scene. I haven't seen Cinderella, but I remember the cleaning scene. I don't think I have a single memory of this one.
Well, thank you for being honest with us, Tristan. Yeah, I think I had a storybook, picture book of this movie. And I'm thinking I'm confusing that with watching it, but I don't know. Sleeping Beauty, what can I say? It's the classic. Everyone should know it already by now, right? The story of a beauty who has to sleep. The story is princess is born, king and queen, super happy, super, super excited. They have a big party and they don't invite the evil queen Maleficent. She gets big mad and curses her, saying that she's going to die by the time she turns 16 because she's going to prick her finger on a spindle. The three, are they god fairy godmothers in a way? Or what are they?
They're just fairies.
The three fairies protect her by hiding her away and making her a peasant girl until her 16th birthday. But things fail because this is, everyone makes mistakes.
Because Meriwether throws out that Uno reverse.
Yeah, instead of dying, she's going to now fall asleep. She's going to go into coma. Until true love's first kiss.
It's a sleep. It's not a coma.
Okay, sleep. She's gonna sleep.
Minute.
And it's kind of like Snow White in a way, right? Why did Snow White fall asleep?
She ate the apple and it like congealed her blood. I don't remember like what was like the twist in that made it so she didn't die, but she like.
I think that was the antidote to the.
It was the antidote, but she's like, whatever, they're gonna bury her. But then she's so beautiful, the doors are like, bury her in a crystal case. Sleeping Beauty got around it because Meriwether hooked her up.
Meriwether protected her with her last birthday wish.
Uno reverse.
Yeah.
But this was great, Nicole, since you are the fakest of the fans here. What did you think about Sleeping Beauty?
It fulfilled all my wishes and hopes and dreams for this movie. I look at a lot of art from Sleeping Beauty, so I feel like I kind of knew it already. And I've seen like clips and stuff like that, so I feel like I just needed the fillers.
Why do you like Sleeping Beauty so much before this? Like, what do you like about it?
I like the art in it. Disney is super good at like their scenery in the background. Because it like has to just stay there, and then they put like the moving cells on top. So they make it look super awesome. And then add in that it was made in 1959, and that art is really cool too. You can tell it's made in 1959, like the background. I don't even know what you would call it, like mid-century kind of like colors and like blocky design. It's a lot like how Snow White resembles the time that it was in.
I didn't even think of that. It's good analysis. I dig that.
It is very beautiful, and I'm very surprised by it. The thing that caught me off guard the most was like the way that they animated the lighting effects of that world. When Maleficent is guiding Aurora through these staircases, the light is traveling in 3D space. It's going through these caverns and like staircases, and the light is changing its reflection on the walls as it's moving. And that's incredible. I'm trying to think about how they must have achieved that with this 2D animation technology that they have.
I don't know if it's the same thing, but as the dorky nerd that I am, I've listened to commentary on episodes of Avatar The Last Airbender, and they talk about firebending, because like you can't animate light because light's its own thing, so it's just like different shades of the same color, and they just make everything around it the darker shade, so it pops more and it looks like it's light.
I totally agree with that, because like when I was taking painting classes in like my art history degree, like I to show light when you're painting, you just do different tones of a shade or something like that. That's why when you see Sleeping Beauty's face get lit up by the fireplace, like her skin looks like it's blue if like your eyes don't adjust right to acknowledging that it's supposed to be the blue light. And also, like, when she's sleeping before she gets kissed by the prince, her face is blue, but I think that's just, like, the curse light. And then when she gets kissed, then her face goes back to normal, and it's, like, it's a different tone.
I'm not talking about the tone. It's more that as the light moves, the same background, like, I'm guessing they must have changed the background cell or something like that. But it's, like, particularly one example is as Aurora enters that final room, the light is moving beyond these, I guess, the wooden frames of the room. And the wooden frames, they have corners, right? They have different sides to it. And as the light moves, one face of that wooden frame gets lit up and the other side is in shadow. And then the light moves and they switch.
Oh, like it's probably just a bunch of different, like...
Either it's a bunch of different cells or they have some other way of doing that. But that's what I mean. Like, they are able to, in the same frame, the light moves throughout the frame, casting different shadows that gives you, the audience, the sense of 3D space in such a really, just like, you feel like you just fall into this frame. It's so immersive. It's incredible what they're doing. This is 1959. This is incredible what they're achieving. And that's what blew me away. Tristan, what did you think about watching this for the first time?
And they're doing it all without computers. I really liked it. I liked it a little bit more than last week's movie. The story was still, you know, flat, but whatever. It's a Disney movie. You get big man, shitting on a Disney story. Oh, big man, big boy here. No, I really liked it. The thing that really won me over was the animation, how much the animation just... improved in only like a 20-year time period, because there were moments that, like, I really like the scene when she's dancing with the prince for the first time, and you also see the reflection on the water and how it was framed. I loved the hypnotizing through the tower. I thought that was incredible. Gosh, no, I think the animation itself won me over, and the fact that the voice recording was a lot better. All the sound was a lot better after 20 years. They finally got the hang of it. So, no, I really enjoyed this one.
we're all glad that the princess here didn't have this Betty Boop kind of vocal quality. I mean, I don't even know what you call that.
Yeah, it's just like a very classic, like, 30s everything. Look, sounds.
I bet if you took away Aurora's eyebrows, she wouldn't be scary. I bet she'd still look fly, you know?
I don't know, man. I'm just like, but yeah, like, I agree with you. There's such a difference in the animation, and like, there's like really famous videos of like the animators on like stages where they have like live models that they're watching. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've ever seen those, but it's like an actual like actress, and she's like twirling around. Like, it's supposed to be like the scene where before she meets the prince for the first time in the forest, like, and she's just dancing around. Mm. And it's like that, and they like, there's like videos of her hands like moving, and they like draw from that. And I can tell now watching it, like the actual animation, it's so fluid.
Yeah, so they're doing rotoscoping again. And it is a lot better rotoscoping than it was in Snow White.
Like, it's sometimes almost unbelievable, like, how fluid the movement is in this. You're just like, whoa, that looks like a human hand, but a cartoon. Yeah. Like, it's really weird.
Snow White was more like an Uncanny Valley type situation. But yeah, no, I definitely, because I didn't know that it was still rotoscoped in this one. I was like, wow, that's just really good animation.
It was crazy.
It was really good.
I mean, they use rotoscoping all the time. I don't know if rotoscoping is the right word. It's the reference frames. Mm. They can look at a roll of film and look at all these frames and at least use the skeleton and the body proportions in that frame and kind of base it off of that. I feel like, and I'm just guessing, but also when you have the owl in the prince's clothes, his outline is still enough of a human shape. Like, that's the joke of it. But I think they may have also been using reference frames of like an actual person being there to kind of build that set still. So, yeah, still using the same technology, but it's crazy advancements either way. Wow. Nicole, how did you feel finally watching it for the first time?
I feel like it's like just everything, like all the frames and like cells I've looked at of it. Like, I feel like I've seen the movie, but now to see it in actual action, it's like, all just makes sense. And it is still my, like, it is my favorite movie. And I think I like it more now because of that.
Ooh. Ooh. Tristan, where does this land for you?
Hi. No, I wasn't huge on Snow White last week. I don't know. I don't, like, hate Snow White. I don't hate it. I just don't know if I'll ever sit down and watch it again. I just don't know if I ever want to talk about it again. I just don't know if I could stand to hear about it one more time.
Thank God.
I'm losing it, man. This one felt more to me like a traditional classic Disney film of that time period, because the Renaissance movies have a different feel to them. They're, because again, animation quality goes up again, and they use a little bit of CGI, just a little bit. But this one definitely feels like a, I mean, I still haven't seen Cinderella, and I know Cinderella is typically the trademark Disney movie, but this one definitely hit all of the Disney feelings for me, you know? It felt good.
Quintessential. I'm starting to see a lot of these story elements begin to develop, because I'm thinking when you see Maleficent's henchmen or creatures or whatever, we're starting to see like the Lion King hyenas as a concept kind of burgeoning. You know, these henchmen are just, it's not just like Snow White's evil queens like characters, is these are actually characters themselves. And also Maleficent herself is a really captivating character. Like, I'm watching this and I'm already curious about it. I've not seen the Angelina Jolie story that they finally made, but you know, her character is actually really curious, and I'm really interested. Like, oh, I want to explore that more.
She's very intimidating for a Disney, like, good intimidating, like, Disney villain level. Like, my favorite Disney villain is Scar. Like, Scar is just, he's just dope. I don't know. I like Scar. Maybe it's his, Maleficent's only missing a song. If she had a song,
oh my God.
She's a lot better than the Evil Queen. She's a lot better than the Evil Queen. I like Maleficent. I also like that this movie, the main characters are just three old ladies. The main character is not the princess. The main character is her cool aunts. And I like I'm sitting there and I'm like, 90% of the movie, I'm just watching these three middle-aged fairies just talking about throwing a party and then they save a prince. I was like, I like this a lot. This is because I don't want to watch, like, all Disney movies are about young people doing young people things. And I'm like, I'm just watching the Golden Girls, but it's a Disney movie.
Oh, my God.
I loved it.
Wow. I hadn't thought about that. Thank you for being a friend.
I read on IMDb. I read on IMDb before we started recording this. Aurora only has like 18 lines, and she's only on screen for 18 minutes of the movie.
Damn. So it is, yeah. They are the making. I mean, how? I wonder what the balance between Snow White and the dwarves was, too.
I do think the dwarves had more screen time looking back. I don't know.
Because she, like, dies, but that's, like, really quick at the end, and then she comes back. Like, it's not like this, where they're having a whole moment without her.
And she becomes part of the dwarf. I feel like it's pretty even.
Well, this one developed pretty well. Pretty
what was Snow White's prince called?
I don't think he had a name.
Just Charming?
Yeah, just Charming? Yeah, something like that. Just another dude.
What? Dude in the forest? That's where you gotta find him, ladies.
Yeah, because I don't think she ever had his name, never said his name.
It was Prince Philip, and then Prince Eric, and it was for Ariel.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, this was a pretty good movie. Pretty good movie. I'd say fantastic animation.
Mm-hmm.
The story is you know, just your kind of quintessential fairy tale symbolism. The sword of truth, the shield of virtue, you know,
yeah,
all
baby.
Symbolism. So that's fun.
Keep of looking cool, bro.
Yeah. You know what that reminds me of? Did you ever see those like those Christian based costumes where like the armor of God and it's like each like the shield, the helmet, the sword and everything, the breastplate, they all had some kind of like inscription on them, like truth and valor and whatnot. Like
what?
You never saw that?
No.
See that.
Is it like Halloween costumes for the Christian kids?
Sort of. I don't know if it was exactly just for Halloween, but it was like a plastic thing.
Yeah, I'm Catholic, so I didn't. But I remember, I'm pretty sure I heard Jacob and Will talking about this last time I saw them.
I don't know anything about that.
I remember it. I remember it growing up. It existed somewhere.
It?
No, I may have had the helmet. I don't know why.
No,
you don't have the armor of God.
It's in here.
And it's funny. So it's also, I believe, aside from the helmet, it's like kind of modeled after Roman.
I know.
Like things, it's like, wait, the Romans killed Jesus.
Didn't they kill Jesus?
Well, Tristan, you want to give us our send-off?
Thank you for joining this meeting of Fake Fans Anonymous. If you join us on the back, we have a 15-foot-tall cake that... Oh, no, Calvin! It's falling! Calvin, no! Oh!